few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Okay, and welcome everybody to Open Paddock Radio Live here on ETV. Sean joining you as I do every week. Joining me, I have Mike W.
Good evening, everyone.
And that's all I have because Doug Patterson is out tonight at a meeting. So we got a jam-packed show for you tonight. Special thanks to JD Webb and John Westling who are pulling the strings and pushing the buttons. Here this evening. You can catch us here at ETV Live, TACEPlay.net, or you can catch us on the HD Radio Network. Head on over to iTunes and click Sports Radio and find the HD Radio Network for ETV Live where you can listen to us. So, Mike, we've got quite a bit to talk about tonight. We have, obviously, our motorsports in brief. We have a champion who was crowned in the Izod IndyCar Series. And then we have some Mazda Road Indy stuff that Doug has put in there for us to talk about.
Yeah, pretty jam-packed as far as things go. We got a little bit of interesting stuff and might as well kick it off with the motorsports in brief. The World Endurance Championship, otherwise known as the only sports car series left on the planet. they are running, they ran at Sao Paulo this weekend, and Toyota, in their third event, ended up winning convincingly over the Audis. They even took an extra – there's a six-hour race, and they even took an extra fuel stop over the Audis and had the pace to go ahead and take the overall win.
Impressive. Nice stuff from Toyota. Can't believe they couldn't somehow transfer that over to Formula One dominance when they were in there, but you know, good enough for them to take the win over a very tough to beat, as always, Audi team in the WEC. So congratulations to Toyota on their inaugural, not really an inaugural win, because I'm sure they've won sports car before, but you know, since their return, this is the first time that Toyota has stood on the top step of the podium with their new hybrid. Other news that we had, Rally America, actually. The Olympus Rally is scheduled to go this weekend. We had a 78-team entry list in the championship. So, we've got quite a few people showing up for Olympus this year. It's going to be awesome. It looks like Kim Block is going to be back in Olympus. We're going to have, David Higgins, Antoine Lestage, the usual suspects. So it promises to be a good weekend up in Olympus. It's definitely one of the rallies that I want to go to. Two-wheel drive, we're going to have Chris Duplessis is going to be in there. They are just, 5 points now away from winning the 2012 two-wheel drive championship. So he has to finish eighth or better. Which is not too difficult for him. He usually finishes up there. And then, Doug's favorite rally driver in the Scion XD, Andrew Comrie-Picard, otherwise known as ACP, will be there as well. And Will Orders and Tony Fever in their 1989 Nissan Silvia, the cars that have really given Duplessis a run for his money here as of late, will be at the rally as well. So kind of a bummer, though, about the rally because we talk about it, and it is this weekend, but there are fire risks because of the drought, or a drought up there in the Pacific Northwest. And so there are some areas of the rally that are not going to be available for the fans that were typically there before.
Yeah, read that as the only thing you can do if you attend this rally is see the Super Special. And that'll take place at the Ridge Motorsports Park. Everything else is shut down due to landowner concerns of, you know, people grilling in their yards and starting a forest fire, or smoking a cigarette in their yards and starting a forest fire.
Really?
Yeah, this is in the Northwest, and we don't expect them to have rain problems over there. They've got
typically
a freaking rainforest on the Olympic Peninsula.
Right.
So anyway, they're moving the starts of all the stages to earlier in the day. And because of that, they're canceling both Park Exposé locations.
Oh, wow. That's just
so
a bummer.
it's really unfortunate. Too bad.
Yeah. Very unfortunate indeed, as that's one of the things that Rally America can't really see happen. However, you know, it's typically a very fan-friendly environment, and I can also understand the concerns from the landowners in regards to people hanging out in their yard. I know when I go to the rallies, I like to enjoy a cigarette, and I'm afraid that I would be really upset if I dropped it and then burned down 20,000 acres of forest. So I can understand the concerns, and it is kind of a bit different because we don't expect this usually from the Pacific Northwest of all places, but it is what it is. But it still promises, if you can get out to those super specials, that would be a great time. It's always great to see the rally cars in anger out there, so we'll be keeping an eye on that. And we had rally cars in anger this past weekend for the Wales Rally GB. And a surprising fit, Jari Matti Latvala and Ford took the win. I only say surprising because it seems like Sebastian Loeb, well, let's be honest, Sebastian Loeb has won almost every single rally this year. But Jari Matti Latvala and Ford bringing it home as they typically do in their home rally in GB. So it was a fun-filled rally, to be honest with you. Latvala really kind of had it from the get-go. He did have some really quick stage times that put him ahead of Sebastian Loeb. And Petter Solberg, unfortunately, this is probably his last chance at winning a rally this year anyways, not to count him out, but typically known as more of a gravel meister, and GB being one of those that he knows very well. So it was Jari Matti Latvala finishing first, Sebastian Loeb finishing second, Petter Solberg third, Mads Osberg with another great run in fourth, Mikko Hirvonen fifth, Evgeny Novikov sixth, Thierry Neuville seventh, Matthew Wilson eighth, and Martin Prokop and Nasser Al-Attiyah running out the top 10. Other notables, Chris Atkinson in 11th, and notable retirements was Aitanek and Paolo Nobre for the Italia mini team. And the power stage times looked like this. Mikko Hirvonen would take the power stage win, followed by Sebastian Loeb, Jari Matti Latvala, Petter Solberg, and Mads Osberg. So another great event out there in GB. The S2000 cars were out there as well. They didn't get much press. That kind of upset a few people. And a few people were kind of concerned. I know that Colin Clark from WRC Radio had some things to say about about some of the things that the Rally GB promoters could do going forward, including kind of cheapening up how much it costs to go to the rally, as well as letting kids in for free and all kinds of interesting stuff like that. So it's a good overall thing for them. Sebastian Loeb, as far as the championship goes, has pretty much sewn it up. It would take a miracle of Jesus for him to lose, and the only other person that can beat him is his teammate Mikko Hirvonen, and that's not going to happen. So we've got Sebastian Loeb on top with 219 points, Mikko Hirvonen sitting second at 158 points. Petter Solberg is third at 119, followed by Mads Osberg, and then Jari Matti Latvala. So overall, a pretty piss-poor showing for the Fords this year. Citroën have really had their number the whole entire time, to be honest.
If you're looking for you've got three events left in the season. If you're looking for the points battle to be interesting, you're looking at third, fourth, and fifth, because they are neck and neck, Solberg, Osberg, and Latvala. I just find it incomprehensible that Latvala's won two rallies this year, and Solberg's still ahead of him.
Yeah, it really says a lot, honestly, about the way things have went for one Mr. Latvala this year.
And that's with two DNFs by Solberg as well. Mm. So, I mean, it's incomprehensible how poorly or how inconsistently Latvala's ran this year.
Yeah, so. I agree. Well, looking at the Manufacturers' Championship, Citroën Total World Rally Team is ahead at 348. The Ford World Rally Team finally gets up. Well, not really finally, but they're up there in a solid second place at 237 points. And then they are followed by the M Sport Ford World Rally Team, and then the Qatar World Rally Team, and then the Adapta World Rally Team, and then the Citroën Juniors are in sixth. So, and then the Minis bring up the back of the pack. So, yeah, interesting stuff there. Another bit of interesting news is that this week it was announced that the Delta Wing, you remember the Schlange mobile that got laughed right out of IndyCar.
If they actually ran that Delta Wing in IndyCar, they should have kept the Flying Coxman as the trophy.
Oh yeah.
I really think that would have been perfect, you know, with the wonder where that trophy is now.
I don't know. Probably up in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, hidden. So, but interesting news, though.
Well, 100 years from now, it'll be historic, and they'll roll it out as the new IndyCar Series trophy.
Yes, this trophy, over 100 years old.
Oh, anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so.
Go ahead.
So the Delta Wing, after we're done mocking it, is going to come back after its pretty decent run that it was, well, it's its historic run, we'll say, in the Le Mans 24-hour race. It wasn't so glorious as it got punted off the track, and it survived a wreck, and it wasn't setting the world on fire with lap times, but it was just an experimental automobile, so we weren't expecting it to dominate. But they will be running that car at Petit Le Mans this year, actually, this up and coming Petit Le Mans, actually. So,
and again, it will be as an experimental entry. It's not competing in any individual class. It's just going out there and proving that it can be a workable concept. And I it'll be great when this thing finishes a race and they can, you know, start to gather that telemetry data that, you know, when Delta Wing was proposed, IndyCar said, hey, we have no data on this. We don't even know if this thing can turn.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of all the automotive engineers out there who knew how it could turn. But anyway, never mind.
Well, the Nissan GT Academy winner Lucas Ordonez and 2011 ALMS PC co-champion Gunnar Jeannette will be the folks piloting this car around Petit. Usuals, Marino Franchitti, and Michael Crum and Satoshi Motoyama. Yeah, that's right. I said that pretty damn good. He's going to be they all had previous commitments, so they were actually, yeah, I don't know how that happens, but they all have previous commitments on the 17th through the 20th weekend, so it will be Ordonez and Gunnar Jeannette getting the call for that one, with a third driver not expected to be entered in the 10-hour race. So good stuff. I look forward to seeing what happens with the Delta Wing in its second go around Petit. So the F1 teams, let's go to F1, the circus that is F1. We didn't have a race this weekend, but we will this up and coming for Singapore. But it looks like, you know, they're butt ugly. We know that. They have a step nose. It hasn't really grown on anybody. Granted, I don't really notice it anymore. I still don't like it because I know it's there. But the teams have agreed that, you know, we're going to do something next year to hide that disgusting blemish. It's like a giant zit. It's like, how can we get rid of this? And they've all agreed that maybe some better foundation and a little makeup work will get it done.
You know, this should be in the regulations. I don't understand how the regulations got written the way they are this year. To allow for, well, I shouldn't even say to allow, basically to persuade the teams to run this ridiculous configuration. All you have to do is look at the Ferrari to see how bad it is. I mean, that thing is just the Lego piece that is the front of the car. There's no reason that this should have been written this way in the first place, as far as the regulations, and the fact that it even has to be discussed that this is going to be corrected next year is just sad. This has to be done.
Yeah, it needs to be done because it is, you know, everybody says, well, in 2014, how do we know cars are going to sound like Formula One cars? Well, what about this year? They don't really look like Formula One cars because Formula One cars are usually beautiful aerodynamic machines. These are bastards. So,
you hate to see a purpose-built, purpose-designed, and engineered race car with this kind of flaw to it. I mean, clearly this is not the best solution. But anyway, it is what it is. It is the solution the teams came up with to work within the regulations to make it the most aerodynamically sound, but it still looks like garbage.
Yeah, it does.
So, anyway.
Well, talking about the silly season, because the Formula One silly season is hot and heavy as the season winds down. And Lewis Hamilton, as we've mentioned before, links with him going to perhaps Mercedes, depending, or really any team for that matter, as he is not overly happy with McLaren at the moment. So by doing that, McLaren is up the ante and made contact with Sergio Perez, which is actually really funny because Sergio Perez is with Sauber Ferrari and part of the whole Ferrari Academy. And McLaren says, well, if he's not competent enough by your books to drive for you in 2013, we'd gladly like to talk to the young Mexican about coming over to McLaren Mercedes and running with our team.
Yeah, let's just put this in perspective. Lewis Hamilton is making these grandiose gestures that he's not happy at McLaren and he's considering going somewhere else. Okay, let's be honest. Where can he go? If you think about it, and you know, this got to give credit to Joe Sayward for pointing this out. Over the last 5 years, McLaren has won more races than anybody else.
Oh yeah.
Second is Red Bull. Third is Ferrari, and then distant fourth is Braun. Had 8 race wins over the last 5 years, and that was all in one season.
Double-decker diffuser for the win.
So, you know, you got 30-some wins by McLaren, 28-some, 27-some for Ferrari and Red Bull. Okay, is there a Ferrari seat available for Lewis Hamilton? No. I mean, unequivocally, no. There is no chance Lewis Hamilton makes his way over to Ferrari. It's just not going to happen.
How do you figure? Not that I'm saying you're wrong. I just want to know what your rationale behind that is.
You're paying Fernando Alonso, you know, the GNP of most nations these days.
Nice. Okay.
And why would you bring in Lewis Hamilton, which they've already shown they have bad history?
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen.
Okay.
Second, Red Bull, they're going with the same drivers next year. I can't see anybody leaving that team.
No. Vettel, I think, is contracted. And Weber just got his contract up for one more year.
So really the only viable option would be Mercedes or Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
And Mercedes, I guess, would be a viable option. But really, if you want to win races, it's not a good option.
No, I think Renault would be the best. I think you could offload Grosjean and have a really strong team with Hamilton and Kimi Raikkonen. That's a team that would be capable of winning not only manufacturers' championships, but perhaps drivers' championships, given how strong the car has been this year. I don't think, and I've been on the record as saying I don't think Lewis Hamilton has the ability to set up a car or develop a car quite like quite like a lot of the elites. I don't think that really Sebastian Vettel can really. I don't know how well he can develop, but I know that like you know these newer guys don't have the kind of technical know-how that like the Schumachers, the Alonsos, the Raikkonens, those guys had. I think by adding
Raikkonen,
yeah,
Raikkonen was a point and shoot guy.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have said that one.
he knows what he wants from the car. He knows what he needs to make it go fast. He's not like you know spewing over data like a Senna or a Schumacher saying I need to know every single characteristic of the car. But he's like you know you need to fix this otherwise I can't go fast and all I want to do is go fast and so I can't do it. Yeah, exactly.
You provide me good car, yeah. Haagen-Dazs. I make race wins.
Yeah, right. I mean, the guy's not magical. I mean, if you look at it, the guy's not magical by any stretch of the imagination. But he's had to have done something right because he was the guy at Ferrari when he won that championship. I mean, he had to tell him something.
Yeah.
But you're right. He's not like an Alonso or a Schumacher, where those guys go into a team and they literally turn the team on its head until they make it to where the car works.
I think it's you know one of the reasons that you won't see a Button kind of forced out the door at McLaren. You won't see Mark Webber forced out the door at Red Bull. These guys help with the setups because they have a heck of a lot of experience with these cars. Anyway, Sergio Perez. McLaren making contact with Sergio Perez. I think the best thing to say out of that is, Lewis, we know you're posturing. We know you want a giant contract. You want to be able to say you're the highest paid driver in F1. Okay, that's great, but you're not going to be. Financial realities are going to dictate that Fernando Alonso will continue having the highest paid contract in F1, and you will not because we will not pay you that way. Mm. However, we're willing to entertain having Perez come to the team if you're going to continue this little butthurt manner that you're going on about these days.
So, It very well could. It's going to be an interesting situation. I like to see how the silly season kind of hangs.
Yeah.
It's really kind of bent on one piece, and that is the Schumacher wheel. Whatever Schumacher does, once that decision's made in about October, then we should know about the direction where Hamilton should fall.
There's potentially a seat available at Ferrari.
Yeah.
And we don't know which way that's going to go. I mean,
Schumacher.
Luca,
yeah,
awesome. Luca de Montezemolo came out this week and basically said that Perez is really not being considered. I don't know why that is. I can understand him saying he just doesn't have enough seasoning to really be considered a Ferrari driver yet.
Yeah.
But he seems to be doing just fine with that Sauber.
That Sauber car is one of the best on the grid.
Remember, we were joking early in the year, geez, give Fernando Alonso that Sauber, he'd be leading the championship if he lights out, man.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good, and he's proved it on a number of occasions, obviously this year being one of them. And let's talk about actually the next race, because the next race we're getting into this weekend is the Nice Night Race there in Singapore, a hugely popular event. It's really starting to grow on me. As one of my favorites, not top five, but it's one of my favorite kind of more, I guess like newer kind of circuits. Like obviously Spa and Monza will always be my two favorites. And I think I'd even give Monte Carlo the heads up over Singapore. But the environment that Singapore brings to this race, the nighttime atmosphere, the fluorescent lights, the beautiful cars under the lights, all make for a fantastic event. And we've got a nice championship battle with Fernando Alonso, you know, pretty much leading it by about, what we say, like 30, 40 points, something like that. And Hamilton hot on his trail. And this being one of the tracks that really favor Alonso in the sense that he's always performed well here, say what you will about Crashgate. But he's always performed well at this track. And the Red Bulls have done decent as well, and McLaren too. So it'll be interesting to see who can come out in this awesome night race, with the championship. Because we've seen, little mistakes from these championship leaders throw this title battle wide open. So I mean, if it's to be that Fernando Alonso crashes out, we'll just say, or has an engine failure or something of that nature come about. I mean, we have a. I mean, this championship's going to get thrown right back open again. It's that close where if one person makes a mistake, this whole entire thing either gets blown open in the sense that Alonso takes a commanding lead that's almost insurmountable, or we have a situation where we have Alonso go out and then the championship becomes very interesting.
But one thing's for certain, if one of the cars ends up in the wall, you will not see the team struggling fiercely in the pits to try and put the car back together to get him out there for 12 more laps.
Oh my goodness, that was we'll get to that because Nick's in the chat room, and Nick is a huge Penske aholic, and he's not gonna like what I have to say. But I do have props, so we'll get there. Let's see. So let's go ahead and make our picks for Singapore. I'll go ahead and go first, and then you can follow, and then Douglas will come in and make his picks off the air. What's the championship look like right now? The podium challenge. Did I gain
Podium
points?
challenge this past weekend, we can cover Fontana. We did not, none of us picked the top three at all. I mean, we had guys sprinkled around in there, but none of us got them in the right order to even merit a single point from the top three. However, you and Doug both picked Simona to be first out, and she was.
Yes.
So that leaves the podium challenge at 204 to 144 to 107. Sean, Mike, then Doug.
Nice. So one more week, not a lot of points gained. I'm one step closer to my stake.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, so
So
your picks for Singapore.
my winner in the race will be Fernando Alonso. He's that good here. My second place will be Jenson Button.
Bhutan.
Bhutan and his resurgent form, or so we thought. And
All
my
right.
third place will be Kimi Raikkonen. With
Wow.
four, well, not that it matters, but fourth, I would have to say Lewis Hamilton, and fifth will be Sergio Perez. But
Anyway.
that doesn't really matter. My first out will be Timo Glock.
Glock. Okay, my winner shall be Vettel,
Ooh.
followed by Alonso, followed by Hamilton. Grosjean for first out because he's going to come back and he's going to screw up the first chance he gets.
Oh, nice. Yeah, good point. I forgot all about that. He's 1 week removed. 1 week removed from the car, so.
He might be rest of season removed if he
Oh, yeah.
blunders this one.
Yeah, we might have some silly season moves a little early, right?
That could be.
Yeah.
Okay,
So.
well,
Well,
that
with
moves
that being
us
said.
right along because
Yeah.
we are now done with Motorsports in Brief.
Yeah, very brief. Half the show.
Half the show.
All right, well, let's talk about IndyCar. We were in Fontana for the IndyCar quote unquote World Championships.
Nice.
Be there, be there, be there. And right out of the gate, we had some drama, whereas Mike Conway said, "You know what? I really don't like this whole entire thing, and I'm just not gonna play." So Mike Conway, grew some balls, walked up to AJ Foyt and said, "Guess what? I'm not driving this weekend. You're gonna have to find somebody else." To which AJ Foyt says, "Okay, Wade Cunningham, you boy, come race for me." And there was actually talk that potentially it could have been Townsend Bell. Because Townsend Bell had a nice, interesting tweet that said, "I have just been, texted to, asking if I was available to come out to Fontana to drive." So we kind of knew something was up when Townsend Bell was sending out mysterious tweets, and then it was made clear that Mike Conway's like, "You know what? I'm done over racing. I just don't do this. I'm not going to do it anymore." And I can't really blame the guy, seeing as some of the
No.
accidents he's had have just been freaking
No.
horrendous.
Breaking his back at Indy and then moving on and seeing Dan Weldon die last year, having his wreck at Indy this year. You know what? You can't blame the guy.
No, you can't.
If you're at all to the point where your confidence is shaken driving on an oval, it's time to stop.
Yeah.
And he basically said, "I'm retiring from ovals. I'm not retiring from racing. We'll see where this leads me."
Yeah.
I can pretty much say with some certainty that he probably won't be back in IndyCar next year because it, well, at least not for a full season effort, because yeah, he's not going to race the full season.
Truth.
And, you know, unless he can team up with somebody like Brian Clausen, who's only going to run ovals or something like that.
Yeah.
Well,
I know Carpenter was looking to, you know, after his success, Carpenter was looking to open up a second car. Why not hire two part-timers, have Brian Clausen drive your oval car, and then have Mike Conway drive your road courses?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you get the maximum of owner points, that's really what matters at that point, because you're so far down the grid that you're really not going to be competing for anything like a championship.
Yeah.
So why not, you know? If you can get money from both sides, which is obviously the concern. So.
Yeah. Well, then we had some news. We were kind of expecting Ryan Hunter-Reay. He was bouncing between a couple teams. We didn't know. There had been rumor that Penske was courting him and that a couple other people were kind of interested. But really, the two runners were obviously Andretti Autosport, where he lives now, and then Penske, if that offer was to be believed. Then Penske was also an option, but Hunter-Reay did the manly thing and re-signed with Andretti Autosport for another 2 years, keeping that loyalty in mind that Michael kind of pulled him out of the gutter, as it was, of his racing career when all seemed lost. As you remember, that was right about the time that Open Paddock first started, actually, right around that time when they first plucked him out. And gave him the Izod sponsorship. They made a huge deal about it in New York, all this stuff. And he had a billboard in Times Square and all this fun. And Hunter-Reay said that, you know, hey, the loyalty and what Michael's done for me is very important. So, I'm going to re-sign with him. And they've got another deal in place with DHL and Sundrop, which, gives him pretty much control of the team. As the anchor driver, as it were. So it'll still be him. Obviously, Marco's not going anywhere. And James Hinchcliffe is becoming IndyCar's new, you know, prodigal son, as it were. Still maybe a season or two of seasoning for him, but...
I guess the real question is, for Andretti, does that fourth seat open up for a full season effort next year, as it has in the past? So
yeah, that will be interesting.
Should be fun to see. But good deal for Ryan Hunter-Reay. I mean, I didn't expect to hear this until after the season finale. But you know what? It could have just been as simple as Andretti was able to get the contract into his hands and Penske was sitting there saying, you know, I think we could put something together for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've got an opening in the number two car.
Yeah, so. It was in Andretti's best interest to get it done before the race, because that gives Hunter-Reay a little more confidence in his team that he's already got a deal in place for next year. And then it also keeps, well, in the somewhat unlikely event that he would win the championship, which did happen.
Well, allow me to put the quote-unquote smug asshole hat back on, as you dubbed.
Hang on. In the somewhat unlikely event that he won the championship, you know what? Penske may be looking for new options, because it seems like his current options are not getting the job done.
Apparently not. So let's get actually into the race real quick. It was the Fontana IndyCar World Championships, and right out of the gate for qualifying, obviously we never really rate oval qualifying very high. It was made even more irrelevant, as you stated in the show notes, with 14 drivers earning 10 grid spot engine penalties. So, I mean, really, could we just maybe put names in a hat and draw them? And that's basically what happened, because then Marco Andretti took pole position. So a nice little boost for Marco to go out at the end of 2012, which has been not favorable to him by any stretch of the imagination. So a good kudos for him. And then second place, actually, on the qualifying aspect of it before penalties were assessed, was actually Will Power. It was Briscoe, then Power. Power taking a penalty and moving to 13th. But a great run for Andretti. A good run for Ryan Briscoe as well. Power was third. Newgarden putting Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing up there in P4 and Scott Dixon P5. So it was a good qualifying, made pretty terrible by the fact that everybody got penalties.
Yeah, 14 of the top, 14 of the teams
yeah.
elected for that penalty. It's just sad. It really is.
Two cars did not set times during qualifications. Justin Wilson wrecked his car in practice and was not able to get the car out in time for qualifications. And Simone Di Silvestro's Lotus couldn't keep up, so it eventually went to fizzle. And that was the end of that. So that moves us into the race. The race started a little slow, I mean, in the sense that, yeah, the racing was pretty good. And there was some passing going on, but there wasn't like a lot of drama. And as we talked about last week, you know, California is one of those carbon kind of replicas of the Michigan International Speedway. In fact, I believe they are sister tracks, mm-hmm. which, you know, is a wide track surface. There was a lot of different lines that drivers could take, to maximize the performance of the race cars.
I'm just going to say, early on in the race, you know, that was playing into other people's hands, but it wasn't playing into the championship contenders' hands because they were, like, struggling at the rear of the field. They were struggling not to get lapped.
Yeah, Will Power and Ryan Hunter-Reay were fighting for their lives, and they were about to get lapped, and obviously Will Power, he doesn't care. Just so long as he keeps that number 28 mm-hmm. car in sight, he was happy with where that was going. And then it happened. The first bit of activity occurred on lap 56 when Will Power and Ryan Hunter-Reay were running together. Obviously, we've seen Will Power lose control of his Penske machine right next to Ryan Hunter-Reay. I mean, you probably couldn't put a piece of paper between the two of them. And Will Power, rather, with a massive impact into the wall. It knocked the car up. Off of its wheels when it hit, and obviously the left side, the driver's left side of the car, absolutely just vanquished. Nothing really left of it, and that really made things interesting because, you know, we then had a situation at that point in time where Hunter-Reay needed to finish sixth in the race to win the championship. Will Power absolutely beside himself, as he should have been, because just as I said, Penske would find a way to snatch defeat from almost certain victory. That made it interesting. But what made it even more interesting is when that Penske car got dropped off in the back, all of a sudden, Roger Penske must have been on the radio because an army of 20 people from all the Penske teams went out and they had set up a whole new rear. They had, I don't know how, this is almost prophetic on Penske's part, had set up a whole rear end of the car that all that needed to be done was it needed to be dropped into the back of the car. And then it was, because 20 people rebuilt the car and got the car out. And it was able to actually turn laps.
Yeah, that's pretty freaking amazing. I mean, obviously other drama was going on. It took several laps for this to happen. But all that needed to be done on Penske's part was EJ Visa went out shortly after that Will Power did. And he just needed to put EJ Visa down behind him. And that got him to the 10 to 12 point tier in the championship standings. So that got him two more points by going out there and doing 12 more laps.
Yeah, and that was what I thought was really weird, and I don't understand how this was allowed to happen, frankly. I would have been worried as a Penske fan how he never went above 105%, yet you can go out on the back straightaway, make a pit stop, like make a turn of wing to see if you can go faster. Car's mm-hmm. released. Car goes out on track, then comes back around.
Run a few laps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't go fast enough. Then he pulls into the pits again and makes another adjustment. It was clear that the damage sustained, that it was – that car was not going to get back above the 105% rule.
Yeah.
It was over 200 miles an hour that he had to.
Well, the sad thing is the IndyCar Series point standings – you know, points payment matrix or whatever you want to call it. It was designed in such a way to discourage this kind of thing where you rebuild the car and get it out there just for a few more laps. But for, you know, the last few years, we've been having more than the 23 or whatever entries. And we've gotten into a new step where there's a 10-point tier and a 12-point tier.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, just by fluke, Willpower was on the cusp of that 12-point tier. And he was, you know, it paid him well to go out there and do that, because that made it so Hunter Rae had to finish sixth or better to win the championship instead of seventh or better.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, you know, good move by Penske. Kind of odd, though, just like you said, he never ran a lap above 105%. But I guess as long as he did those 12 laps and was not in anybody's way, they weren't going to say anything.
Yeah, true statement. And it did definitely make more drama for the championship, because then Hunter Rae
Indeed.
Had to finish fifth. And at that point in time, Hunter Rae was doing good to run in the top 10. So mm-hmm. it wasn't over by any stretch. But there was still more race to play out, and it was interesting how it all happened. While leading the race on lap 230, Alex Tagliani's Honda engine went kaput, which was actually really funny, because that aided Ryan Hunter Rae after Tagliani almost virtually ended Hunter Rae's championship in Snorroma. And yeah. Then, let's see, TK was running really fast and trying to get ahead of Hunter Rae to win the Oval Track Championship, because, let's face it, TK needed something this year, because the year's been dismal for KV, and he then put it in the wall.
And let's not forget that TK isn't all that fond of Andretti anymore after he got screwed by him. So it probably would have been just fine by him to pass Hunter Rae.
Yeah.
And make it so Hunter Rae wouldn't win the championship, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And kudos also to Helio Castroneves, because Helio was flying.
Oh man!
Into that race, they put on new tires, pulled them in for new tires
twice. Yeah.
And
you know,
he was flying around cars. I mean, literally, they looked like they were standing still when he would go around them.
And it looked like that drama was going to play out in that last – well, let's talk about the red flag first. But Helio was doing everything he could to get in front of Hunter Rae, and it just didn't work out in the end. Because if he would have gotten in front of Hunter Rae on that last lap, that would have been Willpower's championship.
Yeah, and Castroneves would have been the one to save the day. How unfitting. Nice. But, you know, no. Yeah, there was a red flag at the end that brought out a lot of there were, you know, obviously they're IndyCar fans, so there's a lot of, yay, IndyCar. And then there was all of, boo, IndyCar, what the hell are you doing? But there was an accident, TK's accident. Occurred, and then Bobart.
Lap 241, 9 laps to go.
Yep.
TK puts in the wall, pedaling hard to try and catch Hunter Rae, and just didn't work out. And, well, there's some concern that they wouldn't have got it back together to have a green flag finish to the race. So Barfield threw the red flag. And, you know, this is something he foreshadowed. I don't know, back in June he started talking about, you know, I'd consider using the red flag to make sure that we could finish a race under green if it fell within the last, you know, certain number of laps and whatever, but nothing was ever fleshed out as far as rules to it. It was just, you know, I might do that. And I guess during the race, he let everybody, you know, some of the team owners know that was being considered.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not in the rule book. It's not, you know, it basically the rule book says the red flag is displayed at the discretion of the chief steward. That discretion word again.
Yes, dang it, not this again. It always makes people assume the worst possible situation. But it was really funny, because when all of this was going down, you know, Michael Andretti is like flipping out in the pits, and they were interviewing him, what's this going to do about the longevity of your engine? He's like, well, it's not going to help it, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not happy about it.
Well,
as the championship leader at that time, you obviously weren't happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you try and restart the engines and somebody doesn't get away, I mean, either Hunter Ray or somebody ahead of him, then you suddenly start to question the legitimacy of it because, well, that person ahead of Hunter Ray made it so, when Elio passed Hunter Ray on the last lap or, whatever eventuality, you could always sit there and question it. I guess it's in the IndyCar series' best interest and best that it happened the way it did, and there really isn't any question about it, before the red flag and after the red flag, the result was the same.
True.
But still, if we're going to see this again, it needs to be in the rule book, though, because it can't be one of those things where it might or might not happen. And I would go as far as saying, the same with the opening of the pits and whatnot on road courses. If it's going to happen, it needs to be in the rule book and spelled out a certain way so that the teams can prepare for those eventualities instead of just being like freaked out when it happens, like apparently everybody was. Because even though they said it might happen, it's never happened before throwing a red flag to keep the green flag finish for the race or potentially try to keep it. So.
Yeah, we had well, all that being said, we then had the restart. We were good to go. And then Ed Carpenter would actually get around Dario Franchitti on the last lap, and then Sato, being Sato, put it in the wall on the last lap, as he does, as becoming accustomed in his 500-mile race extravaganzas.
Well, he made it to turn two of the last lap this time, so maybe Indy this year he makes it to turn three.
Perhaps. Perhaps he does, but he put it in the wall. That ended everything. And Ed Carpenter got around Dario Franchitti, and Carpenter wins another race over Dario Franchitti, mind you, and his first race as a team owner with the Fuzzy's Vodka sponsorship. So Carpenter taking the win at Fontana, Ryan Hunter-Reay claiming the championship just barely over Will Power, which has left Will Power just kicking himself in the ass, honestly. But some of the notable highlights: there were 30 lead changes, which they talked about at the beginning of the broadcast. Was, we were going to see a lot of lead changes. These tracks, Michigan and Fontana, produce phenomenal open wheel racing. Multiple lines. Unfortunately, the seams in the track was what caused some of the accidents because the cars wouldn't were not settled very well going over those seams. It was 500 miles, rapid temperatures. We went from super hot during the day to pretty chill at night, as is tends to happen in California. And 30,000 people showed up to the race, which is actually really good. And they showed up in 103 degree Fahrenheit temperatures. So overall, I say that's a successful event for the Auto Club Speedway, and their debut, or re-debut rather, as the as an IndyCar oval race.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that was from Robin Miller saying about 30,000. Indianapolis Star said about 25,000. So it's not quite sure what the attendance was, but Robin Miller said they sold out the RV parking lot of
That's
8,000. It's like, seriously? Wow, that's good.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. This is fairly interesting. I guess the things to point out from the event. Okay, Willpower. Wow, you have to be kicking yourself. I mean, he said it best during the race. He said for the last. After he was out and talking from the infield medical center and everything, he said, the last 3 years, I haven't finished the last race. That's what I wanted to do this year, and I didn't. And then he went on and said, I DNF'd on three ovals this year. One was because of getting caught up in Mike Conway's mess. Another was basically having a brain fade and crashing into Viso. And then this one was all on his own. Obviously, just a couple more points. That's all it took. But you could say the same thing about Hunter Ray. I mean, just not being anywhere close to Tagliani on the track and
Yeah, it was interesting to see. Now, one of the things that helped, and this was just mentioned in the chat space here, is that Marco Andretti had a relatively sketchy move in the closing stage of the race, where he actually intentionally or unintentionally jumped the restart, passed a car, and got in front of the car, was then black flagged,
And didn't come in.
and then decided I'm just not going to come in, and I'm going to get myself disqualified from the race. So he blocked everybody from getting to Hunter Ray, basically acting like a wingman. I've said it on both sides. I can understand why people are upset. It is a sketchy move, and should not have been allowed to happen. But then again, that's just a team, as we always see in motorsports, that's a team manipulating the rules on the fly, doing it live, as we say, to make sure that their team wins the race. Now that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right at all. But you have to understand that in a competition like that, to win the championship, and especially for Michael Andretti, whose team has sucked royally the last few years, he needed something. And if that means sacrificing Marco's finishing position and looking like crap, then so be it. I understand where people are a little butthurt about it, but at the same point in time, it's like if you were a team owner, you cannot tell me that you would not have told your driver to jump the start and that you would not have pulled him off the track. Because anybody who says that in a position for a championship is, I don't want to say lying because I don't want to question their integrity, but they need to look at their will to win to do that. And it's the same thing with Castro Neves trying to get around Hunter Ray. He was trying to get ahead of Hunter Ray to take that position and block Hunter Ray as well. Now his isn't illegal because he's not getting black flagged, but it's just one of those things. Penske and Andretti took all their chips, went all in, and they were doing, I mean, they were going live as they were doing things, okay, how can we make sure that we win the championship? But it was a little sketch. I do understand. But let's move on away from that. The final tally, Hunter Ray at 468 points. Will Power at 465, punching himself in the face still as we speak. Scott Dixon sitting third place at 435 points. Castro Neves fourth with 431. Then we get down to Pagano with a very impressive fifth place and probably Rookie of the Year honors. Briscoe, Franchitti, Hinchcliffe, TK, and Graham Rahal round out your top 10. So impressive championship for IndyCar this year. A great season, I thought. All the way through, given what we've had to deal with the last few years, I think it was very impressive. The job that Bo Barfield, the job that Randy Bednarik and all the people involved, team owners, drivers, fans, everybody came together and put together a fantastic season. And it's almost a shame that it was so short because I mean we were just getting to the good part, and now it's over.
Well, we certainly did get the good part with this race. A 500-mile race on a track with multiple lines and changing conditions. This was phenomenal. And the low downforce package worked very well. Man, I'm just thrilled. I saw some great oval races this year. They weren't just pack racing. There was strategy playing out. It was what I long to see as far as oval racing goes. And, good deal. The IndyCar series figured out something that works with this new car and the downforce package that they've brought to these tracks. I'm totally impressed. And hopefully next year when they go to Pocono, which is kind of pretty much the unspoken truth that they are going to Pocono next year, hope to see it again.
And I'm sure we will. Pocono built for open wheels, so it should be a phenomenal season with the oval racing. So, well, let's talk about some of the news notes. Will Power told Ryan Hunter Ray, great job, and then continues to sulk as he realizes how terrible he is at going left the whole time. And it's really terrible for Power, too, because we said at the beginning of the year this is probably his best chance to win the title, given how road course centric it was.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. This was his year to win, and they're adding more ovals next year, potentially one, maybe more, who knows. Potentially doing a doubleheader, paying double points. Don't know what's going to happen. This was his best chance, and if anybody should be beating himself up, it is Will Power, because his team didn't do it to him this year. He did it to himself.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I were Roger, I would definitely be looking at new options.
Yeah, I mean, you want to definitely keep Power on the table with your team, but you may want to look at somebody else in the grand scheme of things to, you know, go for a championship. But and that was actually some pretty interesting stuff that was going on over the weekend about that. Because then we move on to the well, we'll just go ahead and jump real quick before we get into the nice bit about Bob. But AJ Allmendinger was a personal guest of Roger Penske's.
Yeah, after Roger Penske fired him, AJ Allmendinger showed up this weekend and did the tour. Would have been good, you know, supposedly good for him and his, I don't know what they call it, rehabilitation. I really don't know, because he's never owned up to, you know, using drugs. He said as a one-time instance and whatever. But anyway, after the weekend, we heard just today he's been cleared by NASCAR. He's allowed back in, but that still stands that, you know, Penske fired him. Mm-hmm. He's replaced him with Sam Hornish for the rest of the year, and next year they've hired Joey Logano. So Allmendinger may not be back at Penske next year. So there could be other reasons, other things going on with this. So does he end up in IndyCar next year?
Your guess is as good as mine? Final answer?
I don't. I think the best answer to that is he could get paid much better in Nationwide probably than he could coming to IndyCar, so probably not.
Yeah, true.
Somebody would pick him up. So, yeah, this is all interesting to discuss, but I'm thinking that he's not in IndyCar next year. But you never know. It would be good for IndyCar to have him, but I don't know.
True statement. Well, let's talk about some. It was the very last race for one Mr. Bob Jenkins. Last race for a while, anyways. So he is obviously taking time out to deal with his wife, who unfortunately has been diagnosed with cancer. His wife Pam battling brain cancer. They've been married going on. They've been married 44 years. So I mean, as you can see, this is a huge deal for Bob. He doesn't need to be in the booth calling races because, you know, there are just more important things in life, you know, in the grand scheme of things. I was actually made real – I was made to realize that today, as a matter of fact. But, you know, it is a big deal, and Bob needs to be at home taking care of his family. And we wish here at the site – I've been a fan of Bob for a while. Granted, I make fun of him often because he sometimes mispronounces names and everything. But, you know, he's been a staple in Indianapolis. They did a great tribute for him before the coverage of the race. And it was just really awesome to see. And we wish him – and his family the best of luck going forward, and hopefully we'll get to see and hear from Bob here soon.
Indeed. So. Nothing really to add to that. Bob Jenkins is, I mean, he is motorsports. You hear his voice, and you either think of NASCAR back in the ESPN days, or you think of IndyCar. I mean, he is quintessential motorsports, and that voice is going to resonate for years. When you hear it, you know who it is. So moving on, Speaking of moving on, we're going to talk about Lotus.
Dun, 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 dun.
Officially, HVM and Lotus have ended their relationship after Fontana. We are still waiting on the official announcement that Lotus is out for 2013, but it is going to happen. They are not going to be here for 2013. All that really needs to be done is Lotus and the IndyCar series have to come to some sort of agreement to Lotus's departure, because they do have a contract, and IndyCar is going to lose out by letting Lotus go. So obviously there has to be some sort of financial kickback to the IndyCar series to allow Lotus out of the contract.
Oh, Lotus, you want to leave? No problem, because your product's trash. Oh, but you owe me.
Yeah. And Lotus, you want to leave? You want to leave? How about you give us, you know, the sanctioning fee that China was supposed to pay this year?
Mm-hmm.
One bad deal deserves another. Anyway.
Honestly, at the end of the day, is IndyCar really losing money? Because, okay, they had a contract, but was Lotus not already cheapening the brand to the point where, I mean, you got to kind of cut your losses.
Yeah. Obviously. Well, the other side of that, though, is I think IndyCar's had to – I'm not sure about this, but I think that that IndyCar's had to make some sort of financial benefit for Chevy and Honda to add more engines this year.
Yeah. So. Well, here we go. Speaking of engines, maybe Lotus doesn't have to leave yet, because Michael Schenck is talking about – is again saying, I have a number of deals in place to join the championship. I don't have an engine still.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Schenck is out there, and then a bunch of teams are talking about adding another car. So there's a lot of potential for new entries for 2013. But the first thing that has to happen is Lotus needs to be out of the series.
Yeah.
And the sooner that happens, the better. It needs to happen this week.
Yes.
So that these teams can start making plans for 2013. You've got a lot of teams that are talking about merging. I heard of Ed Carpenter is considering merging with KV.
Yeah, yeah. Bringing him and TK together.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Do what you got to do, buddy.
Don't really know what's going to happen for 2013, but that seems like an interesting combination of, you know, Kevin Kalkoven and Tony George together on the same team.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. It's dogs and cats living together. I don't get it. Mm-hmm. Anyway. You know, we did hear a bit about IndyCar considering the double headers. Some rumors are floating about. Well, I shouldn't say rumors, but somewhat substantiated things from the Indianapolis Star. They're saying Detroit's considering a doubleheader deal. Barber is considering it. Sonoma is, and Edmonton. They're all considering adding a doubleheader for 2013. It sounds like IndyCar is asking for about $100,000 extra from their sanctioning fee. No, it's not. And I guess their $100,000 they're asking for would cover, you know, the bonuses and such they pay for race wins and what have you. I just, you know, that doesn't cover the cost of an event, though, because you've got to pay these teams for it. The more events you add to the series, the teams need,
reimbursed
money for those. Yeah. Well, I guess they're considering the teams just have to get it from sponsorship, but, wow.
Yeah. My thing is, the only real track on there that I really want to even watch a doubleheader at is probably Barber, because it's track.
Maybe Edmonton makes sense. They're saying Sonoma makes sense because they could do different track layouts. Mm. Detroit supposedly next year is going to add in some of the traditional track from back in the kart days to maybe make a new passing zone. But you really don't have different track layouts you could do there.
Yeah, a little bit limited.
But, you know, let's be honest. Detroit can't put on one good race. Why would we want two?
Yeah, exactly. And to their credit, you know, Penske and the guys, they showed them repaving the surface where those travel trouble spots were last year. But yeah, you're right. Honestly, the race, you're not going to add that much to it to make it that holy cow amazing. But I guess we'll see what happens. So let's see. Let's see. Let's talk about actually, I guess the last topic we have for IndyCar, which is the STEM education days. The science, math, and engineering. That's what motorsports is all about. That's how we project cars over 220 miles an hour at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And the IndyCar series has done a phenomenal job, and kind of spearheading a program that brings teams, drivers, and engineers and all that to local high schools to explain that science of racing. Taking something like racing, which all high school kids think are pretty darn cool, they like to try to do it in their own car, and they suck at it because then they get in my way and I shove them off the road. But this is a great program, honestly, where people like J.R. Hildebrand, Panther Racing, are going to these schools and talking about, the science and the engineering and really trying to grow the mathematics and all of that, to go and participate and grow the future of engineers and grow the future of the sport, at the very bottom levels. And actually, Doug posted a great interview with Casey Kohler, who is the vice president of marketing for IndyCar, and they actually sit and talk about all of this program and their way forward. A nice interview that Doug put on, and we thank Casey for coming on and explaining this initiative, as I'm very much behind it. I think the sooner that you can get into these schools and start teaching these kids about the finer points of motorsport is the sooner that you can the sooner that you can really get out there and start to kind of farm those engineers going forward. So good stuff there. And let's go ahead and get into our let's get into our to our Mazda Road Indy. Yes, it was in fact Mr. Brabham of popular note winning the USF 2000 championship, the USF 2000 championship. Spencer Piggott and his Cape Motorsports, was it Cape Motorsports with Wayne Taylor Racing car, dominated the weekend at VIR, did a phenomenal job,
He basically put up the fastest lap in every session, every practice, every qualifying, and didn't put a wheel wrong in both races. That's ridiculous.
That's how you get it done. So, phenomenal job. Great job for Spencer putting on one hell of a show in the season finale. And a great job as well for Mr. Brabham, grabbing that championship. Really kind of continues to show that pedigree that the Brabham name carries with it. And then also in the Firestone Indy Lights, no real surprise, I guess. Tristan Vaudier takes the title, while Carlos Munoz leads flag to flag and takes the race win at the Auto Club Speedway for his second win of the year. But Sam Schmidt's Tristan Vaudier takes the championship. He would finish fourth in the race behind Esteban Guerrieri, who finished third. He gained 3 points on Tristan, but was unable to overhaul the 11 points needed to take the championship. So it was a really a great year, I thought. Maybe the car count a little low, but the racing and the championship battles and the various winners in the Indy Lights Championship were awesome. And I look forward to yet another great year of Firestone Indy Lights racing in 2013. So, good stuff there. And keep it here at Open Paddock Radio because we will have Doug on to talk about the Mazda Road to Indy Championships a little bit more in depth as we move into the off season and have a little more time to talk about these things. So a great year overall, Mike. And as we wind down this IndyCar Championship, I want to say thanks to you and Doug as well, and Kevin Neely, Tom Turk, and everybody who's helped out here at Open Paddock, doing a great job covering this championship. And we've got more great stuff to roll out in 2013 as we redesign the website and bring new features, new weekly features, and really reassert Open Paddock as one of the premier kind of IndyCar blogs on the web. So a lot of great ones out there, but we look to get back to our old stellar self one day, don't we?
Indeed.
Yes, yes. So, as far as ETV live races go, we do have some ETV live action going on this week, and I do have the right email this time. Actually, it's in the chat bar as JD is flagging me down. Now, this Thursday, we have the Big Dogs racing at New Hampshire Motor Speedway, 9 p.m. You can catch that on ETV Live. And then Friday night, we have the awesome Friday Night Showdown at New Hampshire Motor Speedway starting at 8:30. So go ahead and swing on by for action at New Hampshire, a place that I know a lot of people wanted to see IndyCar go back to. But just wasn't in the cards. But be sure to stop by for the NASCAR Nationwide cars at New Hampshire at 8:30 this Friday night. The Pit Report show should go on starting at 8 o'clock, actually, right before that race. And do remember to keep it at ETV Live for all of your sim broadcasting needs as we move into the off season. We're obviously going to need some kind of motorsport fix, and services like iRacing provide plenty of avenues for you to catch some amazing amazing sim racing stuff out there. The guys in some of these championships are really good. I have to race in my championship that's wrapping up here pretty quickly. Tomorrow, the IndyCar Championship is going to Milwaukee for my usual Wednesday night weekly race. So we just came from Richmond, and I kind of had a bad race. I kind of got caught out there in an accident. You know how it is, short track racing and open wheel cars is never conducive to a lot of cars surviving. And unfortunately, I was a victim relatively early, but my teammate finished fourth, and he's about to win the championship if he can hang on. So we'll definitely be working towards that. So tonight, as oh, nice. And JD or no, John says that he'll broadcast the race if you call the race from the cockpit. So I may be doing broadcasting and racing at the same time, which would be really interesting. It would take that whole pit reporter thing to a whole new level that NASCAR does on ESPN. But we'll see if we can't work something out, get that broadcast on the website. But tonight we're gonna go ahead and leave. Just because the IndyCar season's over and the Mazda Road Indy's over doesn't mean we're going anywhere. We're gonna be right back here with you next Tuesday, for at the same bat time, same bat channel, to bring you as we move into, we're going to start focusing more on Formula One, talk about the silly season in IndyCar, some of the hot news that's coming out going forward, as well as the Mazda Road Indy. And we are going to go ahead and leave, and you will now hear Play the Game tonight from Kansas over on ETV Live Radio, powered by the HD Radio Network. So, do you have anything else that you'd like to add before we kick off the classic rock again, Mike?
I don't know. Just the one thing to throw out is we should be hearing the IndyCar schedule coming up in the next couple of weeks, supposedly. We've heard that before. We're going to announce the schedule sometime in September, and then, Easter rolls around. We don't know what the schedule is.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Exactly.
hopefully it's not like that this year. But certainly we're adding Houston. We're adding probably Pocono, and there's a lot of talk about this Rhode Island race, and it seems pretty strong. So maybe we're adding three races next year.
Hey, I'm all for it. If it's more than what we had this year, I honest, well, I don't want to say I don't care where we go, but I'm almost to that point.
Yeah,
So.
I could care less about these street courses, but anyway,
Yeah,
good
well,
to have some that are good.
yeah, well, we definitely want to thank everybody for coming out and listening to the show tonight and downloading the podcast and giving it a listen to. We always appreciate everything our fans here do for us and keep us going and driving to do the best that we can. So without any further ado, I will say a special good night, and we will see you next week.